Good.
What you got, Shane? What is that?
Diet Dr. Pepper. They won't let me have any cold beer in here for some reason.
Well,
I mean, aren't we all grown-ups?
I'm coffeeed up. Yeah. Who's, what are we going to really be acting like?
I miss the old media days.
This thing's over by like 5 o'clock. Who's going to be drunk by then?
I could be smoking my pale male, drinking a cold one right now.
All right. The man, the myth, the legend, Billy Lucci, Tex-Ags. What's up, brother?
Not much. I'm thinking of stealing some of these again like I did last year. He told me, I was, these are cool. And he goes, yeah, somebody stole them all last year. I go, yeah, actually, I'm just over here to finish off the collection, the set.
I think it was once we allowed Texas into this conference, you know, things just go missing. It was in Dallas.
That's a decent point. That's true. It was in Dallas, too.
Hey, you'll like this, Billy. I don't know if you've seen this. College football playoff predictions by me.
I did.
A&M. I got A&M in the playoff field. What's your thoughts on this? Is that a crazy take?
Is that where the camera is? I don't. I don't think it's crazy because I think Mike, a lot of teams can be put in there. There. Do you want to pick A&M? That means you're probably going in on the Marcel Reed improvement curve. Do you want to go LSU? That means probably that you think they're going to beat Clemson and that Nussmeier. I'm not talking about the Nuss that we've heard about all offseason. I'm talking about the Nuss on tape, who is really incredible at times and really mediocre to problematic at times with the turnovers. So if you go LSU, you're going on Nussmeier becoming that top 10 NFL pick. If you're going OU, I know you like your boy Mateer. I do too. You're going in like it's almost which quarterback are you going to go with that you're asking to make this either year one to year two significant jump or which first-year starter? So are you going to go Bama with Ty Simpson? Are you going to go Georgia with Gunnar Stockton? Like, I just think there are a lot of teams. Now, I think A&M is in that second tier, but there's about five of them that somebody out of that group is going to push to the first tier. So, yeah, if we talk during this segment, you're probably going to tell me you think Marcel Reed makes a significant jump. And if he does, then, yeah, I think you look at that A&M schedule and they play a lot of tough games, just a lot of teams that I think they're very evenly matched with, including right off the rip Notre Dame and South Bend.
And maybe the best news for Aggies, Shane's out on them.
Good. Yeah. We
for
need
the first
that.
Time.
Yeah.
I need out. Shane and Alyssa Lang to be out on them.
Yeah.
Y'all too. And she texted me the other day. We have our little group chat, and she goes, Billy, she's like, I hate to tell you. She goes, but I'm starting to drink the Kool-Aid. I'm like,
damn.
I'm going to start the Sellers for Heisman if you don't watch it. So you better
I
watch out. I'm coming
Dave
for
that.
The Vols.
I was like, man, if you think about this time that we were here, what was it, 4 years ago? There was one vote that had Texas A&M going to the winning the SEC, and it was this guy.
Wow. And how did we do that year? Was that 5-7?
Terrible. Absolutely.
Was that the actual
five
lose?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You had a lot of close games. Couldn't close them out.
Yep.
You know, just
yep.
So, yeah, that one, I was completely out. But then I hear Mike, and then we get JD on, and then I'm like, well, maybe – I don't want to be left out, you know. I want to make a playoff run. So, but I'm officially for the Aggies. I am out. Okay. They're not making the playoff.
Well, I think it'd be tough. But again, like you could name at least five teams that say, hey, there's going to be take your pick of the top two, and these five are going to compete for one or two spots. And who would argue with you, you know?
Let me on that note, we did win-loss toss on
yeah,
some of these games.
That.
And I feel like it ultimately comes down to those toss games. But, you know, from a Texas A&M side, which ones are you looking at? Maybe a game or two you're like, man, we got to get this one. We get this one, something special could happen.
You know what's really interesting to me? Like, I want to start by saying they need to win their three big home games. I could see them maybe working around to a 9-3 without winning all three of those. But, like, if you want to talk about, like, having a noteworthy season, they have to go 3-0 against Florida, South Carolina, and Auburn. Now, that leads me to what I'm about to say. To me, for Texas A&M to, if we're talking next season about, next offseason about A&M trying to build on a playoff run under Mike Elko in year two, what has to happen to me is they've got to go 2-0 in September against Notre Dame and Auburn. So those are the two that really stand out to me. And look, I don't think Auburn's going to be great. I think they're going to be noticeably improved. And, you know, they beat the Aggies, but they gave other teams some fits last year. They really choked a couple times, particularly that OU game. I'm not saying they were close to being great. They were close to being respectable. And I think they're going to be better than that this year. I think they'll be a solid team. So you play a solid team at home at the end of September, and you play, I think, a really good Notre Dame team, but like everybody else, breaking in a new quarterback. To accomplish something noteworthy that people outside of College Station take notice of this year, just to me, I have a hard time seeing that formula without beating Notre Dame and Auburn. I understand, like, last year they lost to Notre Dame, and had they beat South Carolina and Auburn, which South Carolina at the time was on, they two unranked teams on the road. Forget that the Gamecocks got really good there, but two unranked teams on the road is what kept them from the playoff. And they lost to Notre Dame. So it doesn't, but I just have a feeling that if they win those two games, then I think what Mike said could become a reality. Without that, I just think it's like you said, Shane, there's too many close games that you just look at them. I don't know how many toss-ups y'all had for A&M. I forget. But, like, I named those three. What about in Fayetteville? I don't know what Missouri is going to be like, but you're going on the road there. That's always tricky because it's – that one always scares you because it's not really an SEC environment. And I don't mean – I mean – Our girl Maggie's going to go crazy now. Yeah, our girl Maggie's going to go crazy. I said I was talking smack about Missouri baseball this year, and then the Aggies got swept by them. And like, it's a real knack that you and I have, Mike. And apparently you too. But I just – there's so many games that you just look at and you just – oh, yeah, that's going to go down to the wire, and so is that one, and so is that one. And I also think the teams that are ranked ahead of A&M are going to be that way too, Notre Dame, LSU, and, yes, even Texas there at the end.
I was asking somebody, I said, where's Billy at? This was yesterday, and they said, oh, he's waiting until Texas shows up.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, I was ready. I needed my rest. No, I got to be careful now because we're over there – booth next to Mark Henry, so I can't have my anti-Texas slander on too much. We have a mutual buddy. One of my best friends in high school was our starting tailback. He was a really good player for Longhorns, started 4 years, so we just sent him a selfie. You know, when Aggies and Longhorns, they do the I'm not doing it up, yeah. But they do the one hand does this, the other hand does that.
Hey, well, you referenced that Notre Dame game, how big that is for A&M. I think it's big for the conference.
Because yeah, I do too.
Those are the games, like last year, losing to Notre Dame. I know they still had a great record, so mm-hmm. they probably would have made the playoff, but there's a lot of perception.
Yeah.
Gets set for the rest of the year. If A&M can go on the road, particularly as an underdog, and who knows, they may not be an underdog, but I think it's a safe assumption. They probably will be at Notre Dame. You win games like that, that's how the SEC you can almost guarantee gets four in the playoff.
LSU, Clemson. Like, yeah, they're going to try to keep that fourth team out. You know they are. And the SEC has to make it where you don't have a choice. Like, just common sense and any kind of football intelligence, you look at it and go, we have to include the fourth team. So that's A&M, Notre Dame. That's LSU, Clemson.
Another one, Florida, Miami. They got dog walked by Miami last year. They got to return the favor this
Florida,
year.
Florida, Texas, Ohio State.
Yep.
The SEC needs to fare really well in those games. I'll tell you a tricky one. You guys have probably talked about it, but I'll tell you one that I'm looking at it like, huh. And I don't know why they're going there to play a game, but Auburn at Baylor.
Yeah.
Baylor, I mean, Aranda's got that defense where they look like they've figured it out again. And then offensively, you got Jake Spavadal. You got a really good quarterback, and they got a really good running back. Like,
a bunch of SEC teams tried to get that quarterback this offseason.
Sawyer Robinson, yeah. And listen, that's a tough football game. And that Waco's one of those places to play, too, where they're going to be rabid. I don't remember. I don't know the last time they got an SEC team in Waco. That stadium's not that big, but it's on top of you. I'm telling you, that's a tough early test for Hugh Freeze and Auburn.
And you could bounce back from a week one loss. Case in point, A&M did it.
Mm-hmm.
But Auburn, maybe a little different story because they're already kind of – where is that program headed? If they're losing before they get into conference play, their first conference game at Oklahoma and then at A&M, I mean, their season goes sideways quick.
A&M needs to get some people rung up this year. I've watched a lot of A&M coaches get fired, and I don't want any coaches to get fired, but we're just talking about just
yeah.
You.
We're trying to get them need to, buyout paid.
Yeah, you need to get buyouts paid. We're the buyout paying kings, so we need to see some others. So, like, that's why Elko and the Aggies need to knock off, put you Freeze on the hot seat. They need to put Billy Napier on the hot seat, and there was another one whom I think – oh, and Brian Kelly. Not that he would get fired, but, like – if yeah. they don't, I feel like if they don't go to the playoffs, even at 9-3 or worse, I feel like the people in Baton Rouge are going to go, when are you going to go? And that next year, the heat would be turned up. But, yeah, you need to, A&M needs to be the team that does that to people, not the other way around. And then you look up and you go, they'd have a really good season if you just handle these hot seat guys.
Well, I mean, we were over there and Mike's been on point, I think, with the defense.
Oh, and Pittman, your boy.
Yeah.
That's another one.
Nah, he's a nice guy.
I love
they should
him.
Should keep him around.
I agree with you.
Yeah,
he is maybe awesome.
Maybe give Petrino a few more roles. You know, on that. But I'm curious the defense. Mike Elko's been out there saying he's going to get this right. What kind of signs of improvement are you already seeing on that side of the ball?
It's tough coming out. I hate to do too much in spring, but what I think the secondary looks vastly improved. And part of it is Will Lee might have been the best player on that defense this spring. So A&M's had an issue at corner really since joining the SEC. If you look, the Aggie offenses have generally been pretty good. They're, you know, they've started to flounder there with Jimbo there towards the, you know, once he lost the Kellen Mond and that veteran O-line in 2020. But in general, you had the Sumlin years, and the inability to match SEC playmakers on the – hold on a second, guys. Let's get – Callie's taking a picture. The inability to get – come over here. It's better angle.
Yeah, yeah.
The inability to get to match up with those SEC guys on the perimeter has killed A&M since they joined the league. They've had one corner, I believe, drafted in 13 years since joining the conference. Now you look, and Will Lee's going to get drafted. Des Ricks is a guy that struggled in the bowl game last year against USC, had a bad game. He was a different-looking player this spring, almost like, hey, I was a five-star, I was at Alabama, I played a lot at A&M, I didn't have a great year, I need to get my shit together. And he looked like that in the spring. So that, you take Julian Humphrey, started what, 10 games for Georgia last year. I know he lost the job, but still, you're good enough to start 10 at Georgia. You're good enough to come in and play a role at A&M. They added Jordan Shaw, who started for Washington. And the biggest one they're getting back is Tyreek Chappelle, who went out, and Elko's been real open about that. So he got hurt in, I think, the Florida game, and they lost him for the year. And he was his nickel, move around the whole defense, match up with everyone. So I think that secondary is going to be a completely different unit, and that, I think, held A&M back a lot. The question is, how do they replace that D-line? And what really intrigued me, fellas, is the pass rush. They didn't get to the quarterback a lot last year, famously, because a lot of people talked about Shamar Stewart's lack of sack numbers when he was a top 15 draft pick this year. I love the edge rushers. Seriously, and if I'm giving you a couple, they got three in the portal. They went to Colorado by way of Pitt. Deion Hayes, who had, I think, 15 sacks at Pitt. Sam Mpemba was a young, promising guy out of Georgia. And then they went and got, gosh, now mute me on that. And they went Florida, Georgia, Colorado, high school ranks. Marco Jones is a guy who had six sacks in the spring game. It's just spring game. But you talk to the players, and they're like, he's unblockable.
Yeah.
He was unblockable in spring by the veterans. And that's a veteran O-line. Like, man, this dude's really good. He'll have a chance to force his way in there. And then, but the names that I think you should remember are Rylan Kennedy, who flashed it last year big time. He's got that bend around the edge that you really can't coach, and gets real low to the ground. And then the other guy that I think is breakout player for the defense, the two guys I would say are Will Lee and Cassius Howell. Cassius Howell looked to me a lot of times like the best player on the A&M, the best pass rusher for the Aggies last year. So that included Shamar Stewart and Nick Scorton. And there were times he looked like the best one last year, and he's back.
Well, anytime you mention Will Lee, I just can't think of the Missouri blanket game coming out there. I think it was Theo Weiss. He had that thing draped all over him. And I heard Billy went off on an old drink after that. Can you kind of rehash your thoughts on that whole, just how juvenile and high school? And
I'm all for motivation.
It didn't work.
Look, I just interviewed Dan Campbell last week, and he motivated the Detroit.
Great interview. I liked it.
Good. Yeah. Thank you. He's great. He's so easy to
interview. Last of Mohicans is what
so
he used.
He motivated the Detroit Lions for a divisional game with the Green Bay Packers by showing them a Last of the Mohicans clip. So who am I to judge what it takes to motivate? But putting a blanket in the hotel room and trying to pretend it's from the other team and then signing it in like what looked to me like, you know, female handwriting to say sleep tight, whatever. Like, what bothers me worse is the number of people that thought Will Lee really did it. So let's go through the process. This is social media and why it sucks at times. Go through the process of what this college-age football player would do to go and get a blanket put in an opponent's hotel room. First of all, how lame could you be? So nobody's that lame. Second, the steps that would have to be taken, or did the cheesy coach do it? I think it was the cheesy coach.
I can't even get in my hotel without getting a confirmation code. And I wanted to ask you, EA Sports came out and said Texas A&M, toughest place to play. You've been to you've been to a lot of venues, if not all of them, in the SEC. And I do know Kyle Field is electric. But if you were to do that list, would you have A&M number one?
At its best, A&M's. I was actually talking to Rick Neuhausel about that yesterday. He was saying he just watching that Alabama game on TV a few years ago when the Aggies beat them. At its best, there's nothing better. I mean, there's a peak, and a lot of SEC teams can hit that peak. The question is, how often do you do it? And I hear people go, well, what about their record at home? They, Kirk Herbstreit and Fowler were laughing at it in the car one time 10 years ago with the Bear. And I love those three guys, but, like, come on. The problem when you try to judge, and Pate, and I was giving Pate hell because he had it ranked 11th, and he's always got these wild ass metrics that he operates on a different plane. It's that I don't even try to enter his headspace with this stuff because I know he's got a formula and he's got his reasoning, and when he explains it to you, you're probably going to agree with him, but. You can't factor in, like, necessarily the record. People go, well, A&M's only, you know. No, man, like, the Aggies have been, like, if you're going to call them Texas 8-4, which has a ring, and we got to beat the, you know, we got to beat those allegations here, right?
Yeah.
But if that's a name that people call them, and it's funny, okay, then you also have to acknowledge that they're, a lot of times in that 8-4 range where they're good, not great. Well, what does your home field advantage have to be? What percentage of your great teams do you have to beat as a good team to get credit for it? Well, I'm going, okay, in the last, since joining the SEC, I've watched them beat LSU the last 4 years, four times they played. I've watched them beat three top 10 LSU teams at Kyle Field. I watched them beat number one Bama at Kyle. I watched them take national champion Clemson down to the final play. I watched them beat number three Florida at Kyle Field. So it's, you know, before that, you know, I've seen them beat number one OU. I've seen them beat, you know, like they win a lot of really epic, they score a lot of big-time upsets. I watched them beat Shane's Tennessee Volunteers in one of the loudest I've ever heard that stadium. You remember the game I'm talking about?
2016?
Yep, yeah. Josh Dobbs and College Game Day. By the way, the first time I think that Game Day just went rogue on the guest pickers. You know, they're always like,
yeah,
somebody with some ties. And I think they just found out like this new little DJ band was playing down in Austin. It was like the Chainsmokers.
Yeah.
Were the guest pickers for that one, which was cool. But that game was what, triple overtime?
Oh my gosh.
It was Alvin Kamara, Travion Williams, Dobbs, Trevor Knight.
The longest college, it felt like the longest college football game.
It was like
ever.
5.5 hours. Yeah. And when Armani Watts picked off Dobbs in overtime to end it, there's a video like four blocks away. Somebody recorded like the crowd. Like, so yeah, when Kyle Field's at, there's not a, I had some buddies from Cleveland come in for the Ohio State, I mean the LSU game last year. That was the big comeback. And they go to Ohio State games all the time. And they go, man, this, nothing like this. I've never seen any, this, it doesn't even, it's not even close. And I said, I would like to let you think that this is as good as it, it is as good as it gets, but it gets that good in a lot of places in this league. To me, it's like asking who your favorite kid is. So you know who my favorite kid is. But
Texas?
There's a lot. There's a lot of, yeah. There's a, no, I'm going to tell you this, and they're going to get pissed. Okay, I don't think they're going to put me on the board. You know, they put, A&M put Josh Rosen up there for talking trash about Kyle Field. They put, what's his name last year? Cook, Brady Cook, talk smack. They put him up towards the end of the game. They might have done something with Nussmeier, too. I don't remember. But, like, I don't think Texas – I think they got bigger fish to fry than me. But, like, that's not – that atmosphere and OUs need to catch up. But what I tell Texas fans, and I mean this, their atmosphere is catching up, and it will. Like, that atmosphere against Georgia – I mean, hell, they start, freaking, you know, like, hey, like they're throwing water bottles. Like, that was SEC atmosphere. Now we get to go, look at that. No, that's, nobody would do that. That's classless. And Shane's going, at least they're not throwing mustard bottles, and golf ball. But
I was thinking I was going to drink that. But,
but that, the water or the mayonnaise or the mustard, the Georgia game was high level atmosphere, and that was like something I don't remember in Austin. And a lot of people have told me, look, like Longhorns, that are, we have like a serious conversation, like, man, you're right, it was way behind, but like in the last few years it's really come along. Well, you know how it comes along, you start playing teams that people truly care about and that have real ramifications at home. When they were in the Big 12 and they get played OU in Dallas every year, and they didn't get A&M every other year, who were the home people? Oh, well, Iowa State's ranked number 7. Well, by God, let's go turn this place out. That's not Baylor's coming in. They're number 24. No. Like, now it's unranked Arkansas would be a wild atmosphere for the old SWC teams. LSU, when they went in there a few years ago with Burrow and them, that was an so it's just about – being in this league, and what I tried to tell them is, y'all got to start playing 3 and 4 really meaningful games that resonate beyond, you know, the Big 12 and outside the state of Texas a year at home. And now they're getting that. I don't know their home schedule this year. I know A&M's going there. I know Arkansas's going there. In Florida, no, not Florida.
Florida's an away game.
It's A&M, Arkansas. Where'd they go on the road last season in conference? It's still pretty weak. It's Vandy. A&M and Arkansas would probably, I think, be the two biggest ones. Yeah, I think it'd be, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think A&M and Arkansas would be the two. But so they played A&M, Arkansas. They had Georgia and Florida last year. Like, it'll start, you know, I guess they'll get Ohio State there next
Vanderbilt.
Year. It's A&M and Arkansas.
It's not.
Who's there for? Oh, because it should have been OU. Yeah. Do they only get three home SEC games?
I'm trying to pull. Arkansas. Yeah, so you got Arkansas, Texas A&M, of course. Vandy, yeah. Season ticket holders are getting screwed this year.
Yeah.
And would you even buy a ticket?
By the way, which is rare in the SEC. If you're A&M last year at Kyle Field, Notre Dame, you went Notre Dame, LSU, Missouri came in the top 10, and you got Texas. And then this year, you're getting – South Carolina and Sellers, you're getting Florida and Lagway coming home about 45 minutes, hour from where he grew up, and you're getting Auburn, who's always just that's a iconic SEC program and brand. So that's a lesser year. That's when your big non-conference game is on the road and you're getting that. So it's different, man. And you guys know that better than me. You've been doing this for 13 years now. It's crazy to me. Texas A&M's going into year 14 in the SEC. You know how many years they were in the Big 12? 16. So we're like, they're coming up on just as long in the Southeastern Conference as they were the Big 12, which is wild.
You think enough people are talking about the fact that A&M's bringing back literally everybody on the offensive line? Because, you know, that is a bonus for any team. But for the way they want to run it, when they were 7-1, that's how they got there. They were dominant rushing the football, and they were dominant stopping the rush. They could be even more dominant on the ground with what they have, not just the offensive line, but the skill talent. I don't think enough people are discussing that.
I agree with you. And look, the two best A&M teams in the SEC, and I would say the three best since I've been covering them, were like the 98 championship team, where they had, you guys might remember, but it wasn't SEC, but Dante Hall, Jamar Toombs, and they had like five juniors and seniors, all NFL players on the O-line. And they had a guy named Dan Campbell as a blocking tight end. You go to 2012. You had Johnny, Mike, Ryan Swope, but you also had some really good running backs, but you had Luke Jokel, number two pick, Jake Matthews, number six pick, Cedric Oboye, first rounder. Pat Lewis, Jarvis Harrison, both played in the NFL. Five NFL linemen. And then you brought in a first rounder the next year, too. And then in 2020, they had Dan Moore, who starts for the Steelers still. But they had five, like, fourth and fifth year, third year starters up front. And that's what they're looking at this year. They're going to have, I would say, more than two, at least three NFL draft picks up front. Maybe all five end up getting drafted in some, you know, in some level. But you've got seven guys that have started a significant amount. Seven of them. In the portal age, that's hard to do. They lost number eight to Penn State and number nine to Alabama. That's how much depth they had. That they were willing to say, hey, we can't pay you as much because we got to keep – they didn't say it like that, but we got to keep other guys. So, Bama, you can have one, and Penn State, you can have – that's when you know it's a position of strength. And like you said, it fits the scheme. It's going to take – it should take a lot of pressure off Marcel Reed. And what people forget, guys, is when did A&M – and when did people start critiquing Marcel Reed, and when did A&M start struggling? It was the moment Le'Veon Moss got hurt and was out for the year, and Big Chase Besantis was out at left guard as well, who's like an absolute road grader, like 306.5, 315, and mean and nasty. Those two guys being out really affected their running game, which in turn put a lot of pressure on Marcel in terms of down and distance, especially when you're playing teams like South Carolina and Texas. You're getting Moss back. You're getting Reuben Owens back, who you didn't have last year. You've got Amari Daniels, E.J. Smith, and a couple true freshmen. You added some blocking tight ends from Nebraska and Auburn. I think they could have one of the best ground games in the SEC with a quarterback that can help contribute to that as well.
Got a final thing for Billy?
Can they stay out of trouble?
You talking about Moss? That's so stupid. It apparently, from everything, basically, you've been out, and there's a argument in the street outside the bars, and I don't know exactly what was said. Maybe they get a little more intense, and I'm going to kick your ass. I don't know where I do know where people escalate it in the heat of the argument, but it wasn't a fight. It wasn't. It was literally sounded like a shouting match that, you know, one side didn't stop shouting and kept shouting longer than the policeman's threshold. And I'm never going to critique like cops for trying to de-escalate, but on that one, I'm like, arrest, really? So I think his mugshot fit the severity of the situation. And now they've all the people on Twitter are telling me that's going to be their next year when Le'Veon Moss has those big rushing games. They're going to give him like those glowing eyes and like Le'Veon Moss just, you know, committed disorderly conduct on your defense.
I was like, we're back, baby, we're back.
Yeah, that was so silly. But yeah, I think my biggest question with A&M will be, just like a lot of teams, how big a jump does Marcel take? And then my other one, I kind of mentioned it earlier. We talk about the defense in general, but I would say watch that pass rush. See if they can get to the quarterback better than they did a year ago with a first and 2 second rounders on the D-line. It's crazy to say, but I think if we're going to be talking about a real successful A&M season, that answer is going to have to be yes.
And then this whole trip, Billy, we're Media Days coverage. We're presented by MyBookie. So they're paying our way.
Nice.
So we are asking everybody for their MyBookie boldest take of the college football season. Could be A&M, could be anything SEC, whatever the hell, wherever you want to go. What's your boldest take for the season?
See, this is the shit. You do this, and y'all get, you know, this. I feel like I'm amongst friends over here, and then this thing's going, and I'm going to say something. And
just pretend it's not
and
there.
And you know who's going to save it.
We can edit it out if you want.
Yeah. Oh. there's a certain girl with the initials AA that I do a podcast with, and it's just going to go on record. So I'm going to avoid making anything burnt orange my boldest take, even though I'm picking them to go 9-3.
You were not the first person to come over here and say
that's my second. Okay. That's my second boldest take. Okay, so now I'm on record. Like, y'all got me. There it was. But my second boldest, you might want to pause it while I think here. I'm going to say Florida goes 7-5. No, that's not bold enough. I just feel like people are gassing them up, and I don't think they're going to be as good.
Thank you.
I don't think they're going to be
as good. He's right there with
you. Vegas got them at 6.5, you know.
My boldest take is going to be this. Tennessee threatens a playoff berth and just misses out. They're in the mix at the end of the season. Who do they play in their final game, Vandy?
Yeah, Vanderbilt.
At home.
Who do they play before that?
At Florida.
Okay. Tennessee goes and loses at Florida and knocks them out of the playoff race, but they're in it. You know, they're a two-loss team going into Florida. I think Tennessee's better than people think this year. It's not super bold, but I don't have
they ain't losing to
Florida. I bet you, though, that the rest of the SEC teams, if you were to tell them you win at Florida, you're going to the playoff, I think everyone would sign up for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that's what it takes to get there. Again, I'm not
saying
it's
easy.
You
know who I'm not buying into is – I'm not buying – heavy stock in LSU. And again, another team, are they 9-3? Is it 8? But I mean, I'm not buying stock in them as a playoff team. I watched them last year. I watched them in person. I watched them twice in person, actually. I went to Bama LSU. So I saw them lose to Bama and A&M. I don't like teams that are established programs with an established head coach going that heavy portal and just lining up to you know, anoint them. That make you look at the playoffs last year, and it was the final teams were like Penn State, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Texas. They all recruited high-end talent and generally developed it and then brought in key pieces in the portal. But you didn't see 20 players. And that makes me – I'm suspect of that. And, again, like, I think Nussmeier's upside is at the top. I watch him throw sometimes. I'm like, shit, man, he's really – and he definitely – you could tell he's like a good dude. Players love him. Like, they rally around him. But – he should have lost the South Carolina game with a pick six. He was really all over the place in that Ole Miss game and then had that electric final drive and the passing overtime. A&M that second half, 3 picks. Alabama ate him alive. USC got outdueled by who was that guy's name? We forgot about him. I don't even remember.
He's at Louisville now.
Yeah.
Miller Moss.
Miller Moss, yeah. You know, so I see it with him, but then I also go, he's just like everybody else. He's got to make a massive jump, in my opinion. Not like what the throws look like and the yardage totals, but to become a playoff quarterback out of the Southeastern Conference with Clemson on your non-conference, that's a team to me that I'm like, man, I don't see him being bad. But playoff to me, and then what happens, how's Brian Kelly feel? How the people in Baton Rouge feel if he doesn't get him there this year?
All right, great stuff, Billy.
All right.
TexAgs, before you go, tell the audience where to follow you and find the new show.
TexAgs.com or all my Twitter, Instagram, all that's just at Billy Lucci, LIUCCI. And then our show on all your podcasts and stuff, it's Moving Goalposts. It's me. It's Amanda Atwell. It's a good name because she says I'm the only one that does it. She does it. Texas fans do it. I hope they have to do it a lot this year. But it's just our Twitter back and forth move to – move to podcast form, and we're having a lot of fun with it. It's
That's good. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, y'all. Billy. That was great.
Thanks.